and welcome to Denver Music Community Podcast, where we bring you interviews, news, and reviews from Denver, Colorado. I'm Boots.
And I'm Sean. This time, we are going to bring you a review of Dendrite's new album, Luncheon with the Dendrites. And we interview Mike Strasbaugh, who is a local guitar teacher. And first, the news.
A second location for Mutiny Information Cafe will be opening in Trinidad, Colorado. This is part of a string of local arts-focused businesses that will be opening in the area. No specific information has been released on where or when the Mutiny Information Cafe location may open. This look into Trinidad for a second location seems to be at the urging of Kay Van Calabari, owner of Sexy Pizza, who has been buying property in the area and turning it into arts businesses and housing. This is a part of a larger development of the Trinidad area into an arts haven, both by artistic people in the comedy and arts sectors, as well as developers. It is perfectly positioned south of Colorado Springs at the border of New Mexico. In sad news, a second local music figure has died recently. John Elliott, most notably the owner of Streets of London, has died as a result of a second contraction of the COVID-19 virus that was complicated by his fight with pancreatic cancer. He died in the hospital near his home in Buena Vista. He is survived by his wife, his mother, and several rescue cats. There is still a GoFundMe live to help offset his funeral expenses, and I will leave a link down in the show notes for those inclined to donate. And so for today's review, we will be talking about the newest release from the Dendrites called Luncheon with the Dendrites. The first song we will be listening to today is called Snap Patch. That was Snap Patch by the Dendrites, and I think it is a very catchy instrumental track, and you kind of heard it a little bit in that clip, but I really like how throughout the piece the horn section kind of mimics a vocal track, and it does this really kind of fun thing for an instrumental track.
Yeah, getting some good spy movie vibes from this track.
It's just like we're getting into a movie, and it's the beginning, and everything's going good.
Yeah. Get out the popcorn.
Because you're in for a treat. Anyway, the next track that we will be talking about today is No Money, No Sunshine.
Ain't got no money, ain't got no sunshine. But babe, don't worry, everything's gonna be fine. So bring your clouds and your rain.
Yeah, it's kind of a breath of fresh air to have happy music during the pandemic.
Yeah, and I think that what makes this song so cool is that a lot of ska is really rooted in reggae, and you can really hear it in this song. It's very present, that kind of reggae kind of laid on the back of the beat kind of rhythmic section. It's not driving forward, it's kind of lazy, but intentionally so. So the next song we will be talking about is Dujac.
Thank you.
So this track to me definitely has more of a classic big band jazz vibe, and I think that that really kind of, as you spoke to before, Sean, perpetuates those spy vibes. I feel like I'm in a James Bond movie, and that's really awesome. I think the instrumental tracks are amazing, not because the vocal tracks are bad. To note, there are 5 or 6 tracks and only 2 of them have vocals on them, but it allows for a more, in my opinion, creative instrumentation, and allows the instrumentation and all the different parts of a ska band to really shine. And
kind of makes it feel a little bit more like a film score.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what you didn't hear in that clip, as it goes on, it does get a bit heavier, and I think that that's also really interesting. The next song that we will feature is called Bottom Feeder.
Definitely feeling kind of the Specials on that one, some early ska stuff, even a little kind of later on samba. Really liking those guitar delay tones.
Yeah, totally.
As with a lot of this album, there's definitely a sense of urgency. Like, it's very driven, it's very driving. I think it would be really good for road trip music. And they have a really great sense of builds too. It's not just static, it's dynamic.
Yeah, either it's getting faster or getting heavier, but it's never, I guess, agreeing with you. It never stays the same. It's always kind of evolving throughout the course of a song.
All right, and then the last track that we're going to talk about is Don't Wanna Go.
I'm not packing my suitcase because I want to go.
Okay, definitely a happy tune, but it feels like it's about climate change.
It also feels sort of like it's got pandemic vibes.
Yeah, I can see, the lyrics, and you only heard just a snippet. I recommend that you actually listen to this track.
Yeah, this song is probably the most kind of contemporaneous version of ska on the whole album. I feel like this album kind of covers all the gamuts of like ska and all its different iterations over the years. And I think this one is a kind of the most contemporary and kind of rounding out kind of the last bit of the album.
Okay, well, great. That was Luncheon with the Dendrites. Super good band. Been around for a long time.
Yep, you can find this album in its entirety on Bandcamp, and you can find singles off this album on Spotify.
Yeah, so this album was recorded in late 2019 at Green Door Recordings in Inglewood.
And it gets named Luncheon because it is a departure from the very typical ska sound of the Dendrites. And the drummer, Nick Dolan, used the word luncheon to describe the things that are weird, not in their place, and overall a little crazy. And that is from the information that Dendrites sent us. The recording features genre-bending tunes and vocals, which are very atypical for the band.
Yep, and it was, so just to give some credit here, it was recorded and mixed by Felipe Patino, mastered by Ira Dexter at Doggate Mastering in Denver.
And it's the 5th release.
Yeah, we really dug this album, and I think you will too. Just go to Bandcamp and check it out, Luncheon with the Dendrites.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Tell our audience who you are and what you do.
Absolutely. So my name is Mike Strasbaugh. I am a local guitar teacher. When I say that, even I preface that kind of the same way I would talk to prospective clients as well. Guitar teacher is what you would look up on the Google. You would look up, okay, I'm looking for guitar lessons or whatever. Or if you look me up, you would see guitar teacher. But that's empty. That's pretty vague because guitar teaching isn't really a thing. It's more about music teaching. So I'm a music instructor and guitar is the instrument I use. And there's a huge difference. So I always preface it with that. But that's what I am, and I'm based in Denver.
Very cool. What is your favorite part about teaching?
Oh gosh, how much time do you have? Okay, so in that right all the time. Give me a couple hours, and we'll be good. No. So what do I love about teaching? Well, first of all, I often preface this as well with some preconceived notions about what guitar teachers or music instructors really. And guitar is what I teach, but music instruction in general. There are so many people, and I know because I've met them, spoken with them, and nothing against anybody, but I know that there are a lot of guitar teachers or whatever teachers who do it as a supplement to their income. Perhaps they're trying to quote unquote make it. And by that, I don't mean necessarily rock stardom or anything, but gigging musicians who to supplement their income, they also teach. And that's great. A lot of people do that. But I'm not in a band. I mean, I perform, I give concerts and such, but I'm a teacher first. So that's what I am and what I do. I'm not just doing this to pay bills. And so everything I love about teaching is the aspect of teaching. Like I've always thought that the responsibility of teaching is just that, a responsibility. And so when you've got either a classroom of people or if it's one-on-one, that mentor, mentee, student, teacher, sensei, sifu, however you choose to describe that person, I've always thought that was a really cool, very sacred relationship. So that's what I've always loved it. So that's part of it. Also, my success as a teacher, since I work for me, I'm the CEO, I'm the janitor, I do everything. So if I'm successful, that's an equal sign. If I'm successful and I retain students and I gain students, that means I'm doing it right. We've all had jobs where, like, I've had a corporate job and I was horrible at it because I just sucked at it. But this is different because I can look at, I can look at the stats, so to speak, and say, okay, I've got great students. They seem to like me because they've been hanging out for years. I'm getting better at what I do. So even that's just, that's all positive vibes for me and my clients. And so it's a very serendipitous relationship. So I love that about teaching. Helping people discover their relationship with music, your influences and such, and what kind of styles you dig. That's all cool and everything, but it's much more about just what music actually is, the art. You've got dance, you've got art, you've got anything that someone's got a passion for, and it's one of those arts that speaks to us as human beings. We know that music has been around for tens of thousands of years. When I say been around, it's always been a part of the human experience. In fact, there's a very strong scientific, or a very, very prevalent thought in the scientific community that language evolved as a form of music. So my point with that is art, music, dance, it's all part of the human experience. And I get to share that. And that's huge to me. It really is. And so, yeah. And what does that equal? That means that every day, all day, I smile. I'm having a good time. There's a saying, do you skip to work every day? Well, my work is right here, my apartment. But yeah, I skip to work every day because I teach people music. And then when I'm not actively teaching them, I'm doing this and writing music and analyzing music. It never ends.
So yeah. Kind of maybe, starting going backwards a little bit, in pursuing music, you could have chosen many different paths, right? And
absolutely.
So kind of maybe talk about how you got to become a teacher, where, sure. How you got there. Obviously you have a lot of passion about it.
I started young. I didn't come from a musical family, so that was never a thing. I mean, extended family, even nobody played anything. My sister orally assaulted a clarinet for a couple of years, but it was horrible to listen to. So no musicians, so to speak, in the family. And then, I mean, luckily, I mean, because I'm 49, I grew up in the 70s and the 80s. And luckily, mom was into the Beatles, so that was good. I mean, apart from that, though, it was a lot of bad 70s music, just being honest. It wasn't even good, like, 70s, like Foghat or Zeppelin. Nope. No, it was all just, I mean, Kenny Rogers, and I love Kenny Rogers, sure, but John Denver, Kenny Rogers, Ann Murray, stuff like that. So nothing that impacted me as a music lover. And that just kind of was the way it was. And then it was ninth grade or maybe 10th grade English class. And it was basically like a musical show and tell day. And this guy, Brian Sanders, I'll never forget it, he brings in Metallica and he plays Disposable Heroes by Metallica. And I heard that and I was like, what the fuck is that? I have no idea what that is, but I got to do that. And it was instant. And so I got a guitar pretty soon after. And I wasn't about teaching then. I just wanted to rock like every other kid who got a guitar. I heard Metallica and I just wanted to do what they're doing. So for a couple years, you know, I didn't know anything. I sought out tabs. There was no internet. So just tab books and that's about it. And just go, I would, you know, get off of school, go to my room and just play guitar all night. You know, I'd do my homework. I actually always loved school. I like doing homework. I love school. But when I was done with homework or hanging out with my friends occasionally, it was guitar all the time. But even after like high school, you know, like a couple of years of high school, and then I took lessons. Mom wanted me to take lessons, and I was okay with it. I didn't fight her on it. But she wanted me to learn to read music. And I thought, okay, whatever. I guess that's what you're supposed to do. Well, I was taking lessons with a rock guy, and that was okay. But I guess he quit, I think. I don't really remember. But the only other guitar teacher in that building, there were only two, and he taught classical. So I thought, all right, I guess I'll do that. So that's what got me into classical and higher education. It wasn't any great plan. It was the only guitar teacher they had, and so I went there. But I instantly became hooked on classical guitar. And so that really got me geeking out on not just reading music, because reading music is one thing, but that's just like learning how to read the alphabet, right? Why do I learn how to read? I don't read this book to figure out what the words are. I do it to get the information in it, right? I mean, when you look at it that way, that's the same reason you learn to read music. And so I was learning basic reading music skills, but also delving into the brains of, you know, Mozart and Bach and Beethoven. And that just took off from there. And so I've been in bands. Like I grew up in Colorado Springs, and I was in a progressive metal band, probably for a total of about 5 or 6 years. It was a lot of fun, you know, Dream Theater ripoff band, but never any plans of getting in a van and touring with four of my friends. I never wanted to do that. It just wasn't my thing. But I just loved playing. Just wanted to play the guitar, and that meant studying more classical, and that got into jazz. And as soon as I was done with my undergrad in 96, when I graduated with my classical guitar degree, I started teaching right away. It wasn't even what do I do now? I just instantly started teaching. And I've had a corporate gig since then, but basically since 96, it's just been that. I never thought about pursuing making original music for a living. I mean, I do that, but just for myself. And so teaching, it's always been about teaching.
What advice would you give to musicians who want to make a living with music?
I'm going to give you two things here. Making a living with music, and even what you kind of said. I'm sorry, what's your name? I didn't get your name.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Boots.
You're Boots, okay. Oh, so this is Boots' camera. Okay, Sean and Boots, gotcha. Okay, so Boots, you asked before, like, you know, teaching, there's so many different ways to get into music. Right. Why did I pick teaching? But yeah, that's just one aspect of making a living with music. And even, you know, I'm 49, whatever, so I grew up, you know, pre-internet, yada, yada, it doesn't matter. But what does matter is the huge misconceptions that go hand in hand with making it as a musician. Even saying making it doesn't mean, well, we don't think of making it as, I'm just going to have a great career as in some musical endeavor, have a family, wife, whatever your thing is, but just have a normal life, but doing music is your thing. We think music means I'm going to make it and I got stars in my eyes and all that. And that's certainly valid, but realistically, come on, look how many people, one, have the talent, the wherewithal, the stick-to-itiveness, whatever the case may be, to actually be famous, right? That's what people think. But that's not even realistic. Is it possible? Sure, obviously. But using exceptions to prove the rules, like, oh, so-and-so made it, they can be famous, why can't I? Well, sure you can, but there's a billion things that are involved with it. Lots of it's talent and study and hard work and all that. But there are, kind of like you kind of hinted at, so many ways to make a living with music, especially the 21st century. I mean, even without COVID, the internet, and this is here, Zoom camera, it really is the great equalizer, because I can reach out and I can touch everybody on the planet with what I do. So yeah, I might want to hawk my wares as, you know, selling my songs, release an album and tour. That's what everybody thinks of in terms of making it. But if you want to make a living with music, I would say first and foremost, eliminate preconceived notions of what that means. Does that mean that you have to either with a band or by yourself, get in a vehicle, tour everywhere that you can, and sell CDs and merch and all that? Yeah, that was the thing in the 80s and 90s and whenever, but it sure seems like that's kind of different nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, without COVID, but now there's COVID as well.
Yeah, and so, it's going to be different in the future, I suppose.
Well, absolutely, but isn't that human history? Everything changes. It's not going to be the old music business ever again. Yeah. The internet got rid of that because music publishing became something different.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. And so making it with music is a completely different skill set now. So much of it actually, we never go backwards as a species, but some of this actually I can relate to moving backwards. And that's just the person who's got a shingle who hangs it on their house and says, all right, I can write music really well. And so I'm going to write music for other people, or I can perform it really well. And I'm going to be a studio musician and just collaborate online, because there's, you know, Fiverr and other freelancing websites and services where you can hawk your wares on that. There are literally countless entrepreneurial ways to start doing things that never would have been possible without the internet, and certainly without, you know, COVID, the great equalizer.
Right.
So what I would say is eliminate preconceived notions, find out what your skill sets are in music, because it isn't probably just about playing this thing or, you know, singing or writing or whatever. You want to be as versatile and as well and as skilled as you can be. There is, for whatever reason, this mystique within the music industry that like knowing less or like being self-taught is a good thing. That's ridiculous. There's no other discipline where that's a good thing. You want to learn from whoever you can. If that means lessons with somebody like me, that's great. But if that just means asking questions of people who are doing what you want to do and acting on that information, find these people, get online, hit forums, follow these, you know, the people you want to follow. And if you've got the skill and the chops to make a name for yourself, reach out, start to collaborate, do things like that instead of just thinking, I got to be in a band, get in a van and start playing all these live shows. So that's one thing I would recommend to people. Like I was saying, just learn your stuff. Just learn your stuff, whatever it is. Don't think that because you've got a thing, like you've got more passion than anybody else or whatever, because one, no, you don't. There's always somebody who wants it harder than you. So always just make it. If you look in the mirror and you're trying to make it as a gigging musician, as a music composer, whatever the case may be, look in the mirror and ask yourself, am I doing everything I can to out-hustle everybody? That's a given. Yeah, it doesn't matter what it is. Practice more, learn more, study your theory. If you don't read music, learn how to read music, simply because it's going to be a better avenue for you to learn more stuff that you don't know. There's a closed-mindedness that I see in a lot of musicians, and it's unfortunate just because I think it's the way it's always been done. Like I said, I don't want to stifle my creativity by learning, which is ridiculous. But I would obviously keep saying that, get better at your craft. In a band, stop treating it like a democracy. It's a business.
Yeah.
Stop thinking that you're just friends with your guys and we're going to make it as a family and that's great, but it's a business. If you want to be a working musician, that, I mean, again, you're the CEO of your involvement in a band or as a solo artist, whatever. If you're in a band, if you're really good at writing music, you should write music. If you're not, don't tell your band, hey, I play bass or guitar. We got to play my stuff too. If it's not great, you're doing your band a disservice. Learn how to write better music. Things that should be obvious aren't. Ask around. Be ruthlessly unsentimental in terms of your own abilities. If you're bad at something, get better at something. If you're good at something, have that be your calling card. Work with other people who have other strengths. Work your business like that.
Awesome. So what does community mean to you, and how do you feel teaching creates or enhances the music community?
The music communities, ideally we think music community as, we'll say the Denver music scene. We think of local musicians who gig, who are out there gigging, you know, with each other at, you know, at gigs or whatever, or at the same time, different places, competing audiences, all this kind of stuff. It's a very synergistic experience, but it's going to be like anything else. You've got bands you want to work with, people in these bands you don't want to work with, etc. So community, the fact that it's a music community is just one community amongst many, but even music community can mean a lot of things. I personally, I don't have a name as a performing musician or as a gigging musician in the Denver community. I just don't, because I'm a teacher. But the teaching community on the college scene, maybe they've heard of me because I did teach at MSU and because I do have 3 master's degrees. And so if you're looking for somebody who knows their stuff, maybe I'm the guy you want to talk to. So I'm part of that community. So even that's a different question. But in terms of the music community itself, well, heck, I'll just leave it at that. It is multifaceted. It's multi-pocketed, if you will. Performing musicians, teaching musicians, musicians who write, musicians who just do business, musicians who run the unions and things like that. They're all connected, certainly, but teaching is a huge part of that. And even if you're just talking about teaching literally one person, which is what I usually do, you know, one-on-one, if I teach one person who is part of the music community, they're going to take that, in, not just the information that I share with them, because that's just, that's knowledge. You can get knowledge from a textbook. What's a teacher really valuable for? Taking knowledge and not just giving it to you, but explaining it in a way that makes sense, makes you feel better about your craft, makes you grow. Well, that's just like a ripple in a pond. That's gonna ripple out. If you're a better musician, you take it to your band, you make your band better. That's just one like literal example I can give you. But that's how teaching impacts community, one person at a time. And then like if I do master classes or workshops, I can obviously affect them in larger groups. When I was teaching at Dime at MSU, I was working with the music community. Everybody in my classes, these were aspiring musicians going after their bachelor's in music. Yes. So that's my connection with community. In terms of the gigging community, again, I have less credibility, I guess, to speak on that just because I'm not out gigging on a regular basis whatsoever. I would say what I see like on Facebook, and I know Facebook is, I mean, it's in some ways it's kind of a lowest common denominator thing because people go there to bitch a lot. I get it. It's social media. We need to vent a little bit. But when I see lots of people kind of bitching and griping about the same stuff that's been the same complaints forever, I wonder about that. You know, the bar owner didn't pay me, or this band wanted to leave before we got on and they took their audience with them, all that kind of stuff. It's negative. I mean, it's continuing negative vibes. I don't know if there's an answer to that, but well, no, there is. It's like, how do you view it? If you play a gig, for instance, if you play a gig with a band, you know them, you don't know them, it doesn't really matter. But if they leave before it's your turn, instead of thinking, oh, they didn't hang around because you're supposed to, think about it differently. That's how you affect community, is thinking about these things differently. If your band is good and they want to stay, that's more important than them staying because they feel like they have to stay because it's a cool thing to do. Don't, if somebody's just coming to see me as a favor, it's not really a favor because it's not valid. If they're staying and hanging out because my band is great, that's different. Does that make sense?
I also think there is oftentimes a lack of understanding that there are circumstances in people's lives outside of music that make them not able in that example to stay. So
absolutely couldn't agree with you more. Right. And so even that right there, literally any excuse or reason, my dog got sick, I gotta go. I mean, I just made that up right now. You gotta go. Right. But you don't know. You just think, oh, that guy left, he's not gonna hang out for my band. There are a million reasons why they might leave. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it behooves us to be understanding about it first. Yeah. Some people are just gonna leave. And I get it. It is a cool move to hang out and do that. Like, I've done that too. I have been in bands and I've given performances where I do stay because I think it is cool to do that. Even if I don't know their music or necessarily care for their music, I do that personally because they're my friend or because I want to engage in positive vibes. Purely selfishly, no. Would I want them to stay for me? Sure. But I want them to stay for different reasons. I want them to stay and listen to me, for instance, because my shit is on top of it. Like, you hear it and you're like, damn, that dude's rad. I got to stay and listen to his stuff. Not because they feel compelled to, but if they do, that's also a cool move. It does build community. just don't take it out on other people if they don't do what you think they're supposed to do.
And don't maybe expect it.
Yeah, exactly, right. Expect nothing. And in fact, I hear that a lot. I mean, I do a lot of personal development, yada, yada. But if you generally don't go into anything expecting, well, expectation. Go in, do your best for all the right reasons, altruistic, benevolent reasons. And then if you're good and you're a solid dude, that itself, that will be why people stay. It's not just because they have to be obligated. Community shouldn't be obligation. Or just obligation. Sorry, just obligation. And again, these are just my opinions. But still, is there obligation? Of course there is. But there's also just, if you're really cool and your shit is solid, people will want to stay. And that carries more credibility. That carries more clout.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. I agree. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we wrap up the interview?
Not real. Well, nothing specific. Let me talk about just music education in general. What do I say about music education? Not getting a degree, although get a degree. I have lots of them. I wanted to get degrees. That's what I wanted to do. And so I got 3 master's degrees in music. Now on a piece of paper, on a resume, that's impressive. I don't care who it is. But realistically, I just did it because I wanted to learn everything I could about music. That was my relationship with music education. If yours is, you just know a dude who's really good at guitar, or this gal is an awesome singer, or that person writes really good chord progressions, and you have the wherewithal and the clarity to be, again, ruthlessly unbiased and unsentimental about your own skill set, whatever that is in terms of music, find people who can help you. Be gracious, be humble. Don't say your shit doesn't stink or that your baby's pretty if your baby's not pretty. If your baby's ugly, work on your baby and make it less ugly. You know what I'm saying, obviously. Because what does that do? That one, that just makes you better at whatever your relationship with music is. And that's just, again, it's a positive thing. As a teacher, as somebody who shares, that's just what I am. I don't teach because I do it. I do it because I am it. I share information. People learn. People think, oh, that's awesome. Or I've never thought about chords that way or whatever. Every single person that does that, they smile and they take it with them. That's me taking positive vibes and sharing them. So music education is always that. If you've got a teacher who you leave your lessons feeling like you learned less, that you know less than you did when you got there, get rid of that teacher. Always be finding ways to learn your craft. It's going to make you feel better. And those positive ripples just ripple out. It's a positive influence on the Denver music community or every other community. Teach yourself, be good, let that stuff spread.
Tell the audience where they can find you online.
You bet. Okay, so again, my name is Mike. That's easy enough. But Strausbaugh, which is not easy to spell, it's Strausbaugh, Mike Strausbaugh. You can type in Mike Strausbaugh into Google. Scroll down a little bit because there's a Michael Strausbaugh in Pennsylvania who got convicted for child pornography. Okay. That's not me. That's a different one. look up Michael Strausbaugh on the Google. You see Mike Strausbaugh Guitar. You can go to my website, Strausbaugh Guitar. It's currently under construction. Find me on Facebook, Mike Strausbaugh or Strausbaugh Guitar. I'm on Instagram. I'm Strausbaugh Guitar as well.
Cool. Hey, we really appreciate your time.
Yeah, and it was lovely to hear about a different facet of music, and you're still a part of the music community as far as I'm concerned, and I think that it was cool to hear your perspective on everything.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Have a nice night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this month's podcast. You can find all the links to the things we talked about today in the show notes. Additionally, if you like what we do, you can support us on Venmo, Patreon, or by buying our t-shirts. You can find those linked at denvermusiccommunity.com, also in the show notes. We release a podcast on the last weekend of every month. Thanks for tuning in.